Turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes. It's good to be back. We had a good week last week with Ryan down, and to hear him preach and to visit with brethren in other places was good. It wasn't such a good week in some other respects. I caught a cold. I got this sore throat that's going around, and my computer died. So I've been trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again the rest of the week and resurrect an older computer. Got my lessons all done and went to print them off last night, and it wouldn't print. I tried every trick in the book, and I still couldn't get that accomplished. So I'm on plan B this morning because I don't have my outlines available. And we're going to read some from the book of Ecclesiastes and talk a little bit about it, but mainly just do some reading. I think it's good to read scriptures. The book of Ecclesiastes addresses a very important topic, what's life all about? Some questions that every person ends up asking, and unfortunately, very few find the true answer. I looked up some quotes on how people view life, and I really like this from Shakespeare. And when you look at life as just life under the sun, this is what it's going to come to. About life, he says this: it is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And that's the way life is to most folks. So these words were written 3,000 years ago, but they're just as important and applicable to us today as it was at that time. The writer of the book, by most accounts, is the wise man Solomon. A key to understanding the book is the word vanity appears 37 times, and the phrase life under the sun 29 times. So Solomon, the preacher, is looking at life from the purely the human vantage point. And when you do that, life is chaotic. It's doesn't make sense sometimes. Evil prospers, good is punished. There's very little justice sometimes, and all of these things that are so troubling. And he describes in this book his attempts from a human perspective to make sense out of life, to find meaning in life. And so he's going to take us on that journey and come to some very important conclusions. So let's begin in chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now here's the theme: vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? That's the question he's addressing. One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes towards the north and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers come, they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which he said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. As I get older, I definitely appreciate that more and more. Sometimes the TV will be on and they'll be talking about the current crop of Hollywood stars, and it's like, I don't have a clue who these people are. I'm used to Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne and people like that, but the younger generation, they don't even know those people. So don't have any illusions that it won't be very many years after I'm dead and buried that there'll be very little remembrance of me, and the same applies to all of us. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This grievous task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. That's the way most people consider life, isn't it? It's nothing but a grievous task. And it certainly is that way if you just look at it from a worldly perspective. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I know I have those feelings from time to time. There's so much wrong in the world, and we're so powerless to change that. And it's certainly frustrating. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart was has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom, to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is grasping for wind. For in much wisdom is much grief. He who increases knowledge increases sorrow. I think what Solomon is describing here, at least one thing, is that he was in a better position than anybody to attempt this task at understanding life because of his great wisdom. But with great wisdom and knowledge, it's a two-edged sword. It increases sorrow. I'm reminded when I worked on my PhD that if there was one thing that I learned was how little I knew. The more I learned, the less I knew. It's a paradox. Verse 1 of chapter 2. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoying pleasure. He's recounting some things that he decided to try to make himself happy. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of mirth, what does it accomplish? Still have the same troubles in life, even though you had a good laugh. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven, and all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I'm going to engage in some building projects. That'll surely make me happy. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. We had the good fortune and blessing to have our house custom built in Michigan. But you know, 15 or 20 years later, it still needed a new roof and things start deteriorating. So the shine wears off fairly quickly. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possession of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. If you read about the vast riches of Solomon, that it's almost incomparable with anyone in the history of the world. I think he received something like 6,000 talents of gold a year, and a talent is 75 pounds. Can you imagine that kind of wealth? Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. He took a no-holds-barred approach to this thing. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all of my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. You can only accumulate so much and only enjoy so much. And it doesn't provide lasting satisfaction. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only that he has already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's wisdom's good, he's saying. The wise man's eyes are in his head. The fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there's no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool. Since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. In the end, there's no difference, is there? Whether you're wise or a fool, we all get that shovel full of dirt in our face, as we might say, in the end. What effect did it have? Verse 17, therefore I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now he's going to talk about hard work. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun. Why? Because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. No matter how much we might gain, how much we might build and so forth, we're going to die and the next generation is going to take over sooner or later. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. We might do all of these great things and leave it to an idiot. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all his labor? And for the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun. For all his days are sorrowful, and his work grievous. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. You work and you work and you work, and what do you get out of it? Not much. There is nothing, but he makes these conclusions from time to time that gives some insight on where he's headed. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good. And this also I saw was from the hand of God. Don't be totally despaired by the things of this life. God has meant for us to enjoy these things, but we have to put them in their proper perspective. They're not meant to give us lasting satisfaction. Enjoy them for what they are, and don't try to make more out of them than they were meant to be. For who can eat, who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for wind. Now he's going to talk about some contrasts in life, we might say. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to fear and a time to sow, a time to tear excuse me, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? Well, from a perspective of the here and the now, not a whole lot. I have seen the God-given task which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. And here's a key thought to remember about this book. Also, he, speaking of God, has put eternity in their hearts. Why do the things of this life, the things under the sun, provide no satisfaction? Because God has put eternity in our hearts, and the things of this life are temporary. They're going to pass away. The earth and all the works therein are going to be burned up, Peter said. This earth is going out of business, but God has put eternity in our hearts, and when we seek satisfaction in the things of this life only, we're going to come up with an empty sack. So he's put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. That's a positive. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labors. It is the gift of God. These things under the sun are blessings, but we have to keep them in their proper perspective. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which has already been and what is to be has already been, and God reckons an account of what is past. And that's going to be a prominent thought when he closes out this book. We need to remember we're going to be held to account by God. Moreover, I saw under the sun in the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. I think that's one of the things I hate most about life under the sun, that there is so much wickedness in this world, there's so much iniquity, there's so much injustice. It seems even in our country, the law applies to most of us, but not some of us, and that's a frustrating thing. But there's going to be a grand accounting that'll take place in the end. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there shall be a time for every purpose and for every work. Judgment is coming. I said in my heart, concerning the estate of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like beasts. From a worldly, under-the-sun perspective, there's no difference between me and a dog or a cow or a sheep or whatever. We are born, we live, and we die. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to beasts. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over beast, for all is vanity. The Jehovah's Witnesses like to use this passage to prove in their minds that we don't have an eternal soul, but Solomon is writing from the perspective of life under the sun. When you look at it from that perspective, there is no difference between us and the animals. We all live and we all die. All go to one place. All are from the dust and all return to dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes up, and the spirit of the beast, which goes down to the earth? So I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Take the blessings God gives you today and be thankful for those blessings. That's a common thing that he keeps returning to. Chapter 4, then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun, and look, the tears of the oppressed. But they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors there was power, but they have no comforter. Therefore I praise the dead who are already dead. more than the living who are still alive. Yea, better than both is he who has never existed, who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. I think we've all felt that from time to time, haven't we? When you look out on the wickedness and the terrible things that go on in the world. Sometimes it'd be better if you'd never born, wouldn't? At least you think that. I was looking this morning on the internet at the news, and I looked at that walkway that collapsed in Florida. And I thought, how terrible to lose a loved one in something as crazy as that. I mean, you couldn't make sense out of life if you were the victim of that. Verse 4, again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Don't follow the keep up with the Joneses kind of philosophy. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Better is a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without companion. He has neither son nor brother. This brings sadness to my heart when I think about this. A person alone, think of us alone, yet there is no end to all his labors, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. But he never asks, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? The picture here is a person that just keeps working and working to accumulate, and he ignores having relationships with others because he's on this quest to gain more and more and more. But who's it for? It's vanity. Two are better than one. It's better to have some companions than to have all of these material things, because they have good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. It's better to sacrifice a little on material things and have solid relationships with others than to focus purely on material things. Better is a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. Maybe taking a poke at himself there. No matter how much position you might gain, if you're a fool, you're still a fool. And that's no good place to be. For he comes out of prison to be king, although he was born poor in his kingdom. I saw all the living who walk under the sun. They were with the second youth who stands in his place. There was no end of all the people over whom he was made king. Yet those who come afterward will not rejoice in him. What are they going to say? Well, the last king we had was a fool. So the power and prestige of the position really brought nothing. Surely this also was vanity and grasping for the wind. Walk prudently when you go to the house of God, good advice, and draw near to hear rather than give the sacrifice of fools. The sacrifice of fools, I think, is idle chatter. When we're in the house of God, we need to listen rather than talk. For they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. Nothing gets us in trouble faster than our tongue. For God is in heaven and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. You just want to identify a fool. It's usually the person that's talking too much. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it. Don't make promises you can't keep, for he has no pleasure in fools. So a fool is one that makes a vow and doesn't keep it. It is better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin. Nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Oh, I misspoke. Well, maybe you should have kept your mouth shut in the beginning. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there is also vanity, but fear God. A God-fearing person is a person that is slow to speak, as James said. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter. For high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. Ultimately, there'll be justice. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all. The king himself is served from the field. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When you start down the road of looking for riches and possessions to provide you satisfaction in life, the more you get, the more you want. It's a never-ending, vicious cycle. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So that what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? You can gain all of these riches, but you know you can only drive one car at a time, or fly one airplane at a time, eat one meal at a time. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. He's worrying about keeping his riches, about gaining more, rather than being satisfied with what he has. There is a severe evil which I have seen the sun, riches kept for their owner to his hurt. I've seen that over the years, especially when I worked with some farmers, that they're just on this quest to build this kingdom in their mind, and they sacrifice their family in the process, and it's very sad. And they come up at the end and they find that they're one of the most hated men in the neighborhood rather than loved. But those riches perish through misfortune. When he begets a son, there is nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. There's no U-Hauls behind a hearse. And this also is your evil, that just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? Think about that. When we're naked when we come in this world, we come in with nothing, and we go out in the very same manner. So in the end, what was all of this accumulation of wealth all about? It's vanity. It's madness. Verse 18, here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor. It's not wrong to work. In fact, it's something God requires of us. But it's got to be, what it gains for us has got to be kept in this proper perspective. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor in which he toils under the sun, all the days of his life, which God gives him. For it is his heritage. It's a blessing from God. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. He's not dismissing material things totally. Again, he's just after the right perspective. For he will not dwell undo the days of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. Chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. That perks my ears up. This sounds like something I really need to pay attention to. It's common. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity, and it is an evil affliction. Couple of things come to mind is no matter how long of a life we live, I'm not going to be able to consume all of the things that I've been blessed with. I'm going to have to pass that on to someone. Or through bad investments, bad business deals, I could lose my fortune along the way. So I got to put it again in perspective. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better than he. I think all of us that are parents consider our children as our greatest blessing, and certainly the people in this day, maybe even more so. But if you're not satisfied with good, it doesn't make any difference how many children you have as a blessing. Your life is vain. It'd be better if you hadn't been born. For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Again, if you're not satisfied with good, it'd be better for you never to have been born. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this has more rest than that man. The stillborn child would be have more rest than the man that does not love good. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, but has not seen goodness, do not all go to one place? That's what we got to keep in our minds. That's the ultimate end for all of us. As we read from 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, we all must appear before that judgment seat of Christ and give an account. And Paul said, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, he persuaded men. All the labor of man is for his mouth. That's what it appears from a worldly perspective, doesn't it? And yet the soul is not satisfied. No matter how much labor we do in this world, it doesn't fully satisfy this inward man. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? He's got a lot more than the rich man that doesn't know how to walk before the living. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. Some people spend most of their life dreaming about what they want to get rather than appreciating what they have. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Whatever one is, he has been named already, for it is known that he is a man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? For who knows what is good for man in life, all the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? Nobody can predict the future. Enjoy the blessings that God gives us today. Enjoy that today. Appreciate it. But don't live in despair, dreaming about what you might have that you don't have. Appreciate what's here in front of you now and today. Well, let's stop there, and then this evening we'll pick up and finish the book. When you look at life under the sun, and only from that perspective, life is can be pretty miserable. But fortunately, there's more to life than the here and the now. God has put eternity in our hearts, and when we don't then put God in our hearts, we're going to live a very unsatisfying life. If God is not in your heart, if you've not obeyed the gospel, to live a fulfilled life, you need to obey the gospel. And we encourage you to do that as we stand and sing.
When with the Savior we enter.